Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now, Saul Kirzner built empires. He broke rules and rewrote the hospitality playbook. But behind the glittering resorts and the global acclaim was a man as feared as he was admired. And now in a new memoir, it's called Saul, My Friend and Adversary, the author Peter Venison lifts the veil on this legend and the cost of building it. And he joins us now to talk about power, politics, and I hope the real Saul Kirzner. So Peter, a very warm welcome and thank you. And you describe Saul Kirzner as, I quote, a chain-smoking, whiskey-drinking genius who transcended borders to become a key player in the international hospitality industry. Was he an empire builder? Was he always on an ego trip, or was it a bit of both?
Probably a bit of both, Jeremy. Yes, he was very committed to what he did. I mean, his life was his work. So, he had great aspirations.
Was he a person, Peter, that truly believed in surrounding himself and nurturing talent, or was it always about building, one, the company brand, and also his own personal brand, I wonder?
I don't think he was too concerned with his own personal brand. He did look for talent, but he had difficulty keeping talent because of the way he was, because of his character. And when he got talent, he sometimes abused that talent in certain ways, and the talent left him. So he was on a constant search for talent.
There's a sense, Peter, that in many ways he was almost untouchable. People who dared to say no to him, I read in the book, often found themselves isolated or shunned completely. What was your experience, and what happened to those people if they found the courage to stand up to him?
Well, few did, unfortunately. He actually respected people that stood up to him, but he didn't necessarily allow them to use their talents. He was someone who, if you can imagine four or five talented people in a room trying to solve a problem, having a debate trying to solve a problem, they might have been struggling with what the answer to the problem was for, say, 10 minutes or half an hour. Saul would walk in and he'd immediately solve the problem. So he had this way of, to some extent, squashing them, see what I mean. But at the same time, they admired him. They thought, well, you know, why didn't we think of that?
Are you able to give us a sense of how he was able to translate vision, and often, Peter, a very big, bold, audacious vision, into actual practical reality? In other words, to get the job done. What was the strategic or the business process behind that?
Well, he was driven. He set, as I say in the book, when he started a project, he worked out fairly quickly how long the project should take, how long it could take, and he set a target, often a very hard target to meet in the sense of a date for getting the job done, and he just never let it slide. He was a maniac to stick to that date, which had a lot of benefits, but it also caused a lot of difficulty because people obviously had to work exceptionally hard to meet his target. But he had this ability to set a target for himself and drive everybody else to meet that target.
When you first met him, if I recall from the book, you were well established, or at least on your way to becoming well established within the hospitality industry in the United Kingdom. What drew you to him, and how did he convince you to start what would become a decades-long journey at his side?
Well, he basically spelled out what was going to be an adventure, and I fell for that, and I'm glad I did. I mean, I initially had signed up to go to work with him for 2 years on the basis, well, this will be a two-year experience, which will be good for me and my family. I had no idea that I would go beyond the 2 years or that I'd even want to stay in South Africa. But he was so inspiring and his goals were so lofty that he just sucked me in, shall we say, and I never regretted it. So, I stayed with him a lifetime in many ways.
I'm curious to know what made you stay, though, given that often you had some fairly torturous and difficult arguments.
My wife said to me once, when he lured me back to work for him, I hadn't been working for him for a number of years, I've been running my own business, and he lured me back, and I said to him, no, I'm never going to come back to work for you. And he said, well, what does your wife think? And what does Diana think? And I said, I'm sure she agrees with me. So I called her. I was in a different country at the time. And said, what do you think? And she said, we and the children have discussed this many times. And we have never had such an exciting and interesting life as when you were working with Sol. So if you want to go and work for him again, we're all for it. We're with you. It was an exciting life with him.
And Peter Venison, he built a business, or certainly at the very beginning, he built a business, and this is pre-Mandela, and we'll get to that in just a moment, at the height of apartheid in South Africa. How did Sol Kersnor, how was he able to navigate apartheid politics without becoming an enabler?
He was completely apolitical. He almost never dwelt on the politics of the country. He saw a gap in terms of being able to use the political arena, i.e. with the homeland. He saw the gap to make money, obviously, and to build Sun City. But he never, ever in my entire career with him discussed politics.
Would you describe him, Peter, as a master planner or a master manipulator? He did at from time to time cross the ethical line, particularly with his relationship with trans guy's George Matanzima.
Well, you know, I can't get into the detail of that because I wasn't party to the detail, but I wouldn't say he was a manipulator.
What was his relationship like with Nelson Mandela? Do you think it was a genuine, warm relationship, or simply one based on strategy and opportunism?
No, it was a warm relationship. I mean, I met together with him on numerous occasions. He admired Nelson Mandela greatly, and he understood that Nelson Mandela didn't have any opportunity to have any business experience. And he helped him in that regard. He helped Mandela in terms of helping him in a sense of managing. I don't mean managing people, because obviously Mandela was fantastic at that. But the business of business he helped him with. And they had a warm relationship. I was witness to that on many occasions. Not that many other people had a warm relationship with Nelson Mandela, obviously, because he was a warm person. But I saw them together at dinner and other meetings, and they had a very, very good relationship, and they admired each other.
And Peter, you also write in the book extensively about Sol Kersnor's drinking and womanizing. How did that impact on the way in which he operated and the way in which he related to those executives around him, such as yourself?
It didn't have a terribly negative effect. It was just him. You just accepted that's the way he was. He was two persons, in a sense, a person who could really enjoy himself, but a person who was also driven by the job. It was just part of him. You just accepted that.
The book is called Sol, My Friend and Adversary. The author is Peter Venison, who worked closely at Sol Kersnor's side, and the publisher is Ride or Die Press. Peter, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time and the insight.
Business on Heart 1027 with MoneyWeb.